we are very, we, my husband's not here because he's ill, and I'm so sorry. He would love to be here. We were missionaries for 25 years, so we have seen many of you at different churches, if or this church before. And you know what? We're old enough to retire, but God's not letting us. He's saying, keep going, rock on. So we are, and I'll tell you a little bit more about it. But this is very fun to be at Tiffany and Jeff's church, because we've known them since they were pretty young. Not little, but medium. And of course, Susan, Jeff's mom, is a good friend, and Rick, his dad. And then Tiffany's sister is my daughter's good friend. So all these connections. And then, of course, Jocelyn here. I met her in Indonesia. Yes, selamat pagi, sayang. Yeah. So we'll talk later more about Indonesia. So Randy and I were missionaries to Indonesia, or in America we say Indonesia, for 25 years. So we went young and we came back old. That's what happens in life. But God's good, isn't he? But he has led us into a new type of ministry, which the video will explain in a minute. But we are excited to be here. We're in a new step and phase of life. God never gives up on us, does he? And he always calls us to do his work until we go to heaven. So we're going to have a video now, and then I'll share God's word. I remember the first time I moved overseas. I was an exchange student to Japan. Everything was so different. They drove on the other side of the road. I didn't understand the language, and I could not figure out what I was eating most of the time. Those were my first impressions, but with the help of teachers and friends, I began learning the language, how to take the trains, and what I was eating. And I started to feel at home. Hi, I'm Carl Martin, and along with my husband, Randy, we served as Assembly of God Northwest Ministry Network missionaries. After 25 years serving cross-culturally, God has brought us back to the Pacific Northwest to a new ministry. It is working in diaspora missions. Diaspora missions is a response to what God is doing now throughout the world and right in our own communities. Let me give you some background. For over 200 years, the Western world has faithfully sent missionaries across oceans and cultures to share the gospel, and they are still needed. But now God is changing things up. Those who would never hear the gospel in their own countries have been brought to us, to our towns, our neighborhoods, and our schools. In 2023, data revealed that there are over 1 million people on planet Earth displaced from their homes and countries. This is usually because of war or natural disasters. Citizens there have no choice but to flee. These are the refugees and asylees. Then there are those who have moved to other countries seeking employment because the opportunities to support their families is very limited in their home countries. Others migrate so their children have better education opportunities for a better future. And in the midst of this, there are those exploited, trafficked for sex work or in forced labor. These are the diaspora of this world, and ministering to them is diaspora missions. Out of the 1 billion displaced peoples on planet Earth, the United States receives the most refugees, and Washington State is the third highest receiving state of immigrants and refugees. And in 2022, King County welcomed over 23,000 new net immigrants, the fourth highest of any county in the nation. To meet this need, our team, myself as director, Sharon Hamer as Director of English Language Learning, and Randy as Community Care Lead are partnering with Shoreline Community Church to open a center, ICC, International Community Center. Our heart is to reach out to the needs of those who come to our shores, the refugees, the immigrants, the asylees, and international students. International Community Center is a holistic church plant, meeting the needs of our new global neighbors. We are establishing ICC right in King County, this most critical geographic area at this most opportune time. The needs of our new global neighbors are great, especially when they first arrive in the U.S. Most need help learning English, like I needed help learning Japanese. They need help learning how to do the basic things we take for granted, such as where to shop, how to get a driver's license, how to find housing, how to pay bills, and so much more. Jesus fed the hungry, he healed the sick, and he taught the good news. He ministered holistically, and this is how we want to pattern our ministry. Also, many of our new immigrant neighbors are committed Christians and have a heart to minister, and we want to partner with them. Many of our global neighbors have come through war and trauma, and who else is better equipped to serve them than those who have the true hope, the hope of God? This is an unprecedented time in our world, and we are excited to be part of God's plan at this time. It is a unique mission field where we feel we are uniquely experienced. We invite you to learn more about our work and become a partner with us on this exciting and amazing journey. Well, thank you. My job in Indonesia was to be a college professor, and we didn't use microphones, so I'm getting used to using microphones now. So thank you for your patience. As missionaries do, as we travel, we have prayer cards or touch cards. Ours is in the back on the left by the map, and there is a QR code. So you can see this video again if you want on there, or you can email us. You can also look and ask to be on our Facebook page and learn about what we're doing. Keep up on that. So this grandma is learning how to do social media, so you pray for me. And that's how we keep in contact with our kids and our grandkids, those of us who are older, isn't it? So in a moment, we'll be hearing God's word. But before I start on that, I want to talk a little bit about our work still. How many of you have ever lived in another country before? Traveled out of the country. Gone to Mexico? Okay, good. Yes, most of us here. How many of you ever lived a little bit, like over a few months or a year in another country? Yes. And how many of you are from another country? You don't have to raise your hand. Okay, there's someone here. Yeah. So if you think about it, I got to hold my microphone up here. If this migration issue, which you see on the news, it can be an issue or it could be what God's doing. So God has put it on our heart to look at it as more of a way of what God is doing, because God is sovereign, isn't he? Nothing takes him by surprise. And so I look back, we often on the news, there's so many negative things about immigration, and then there's the political fighting. Hey, we're Christians. We don't do that political fighting. We follow Jesus. And what does Jesus say? He says to love the foreigners in Leviticus 19. It's very clear. Love the foreigners because you were foreigners once in Egypt. And it says love them as yourself. So I'm not talking about documented, undocumented. I'm not getting into that, but I am saying that as Christians, that's what we do. But if you've ever had someone new come to your work and they don't speak English, it's challenging, isn't it? Or if you've had to try to learn another language, I've had to learn a couple different languages. Oh my, like what I said, when I went to Japan, I could count to five. That was really good. And then I went to Indonesia with three. I'm ringing here, and I'm not. No, don't know why. Ring, ring. There we go. Better. So I went to Japan or Indonesia with three little kids. And when you have little kids, you have to know how to find a bathroom. And I could not figure out how to say that at first. So I couldn't. I could count, and I could sing a praise song in Indonesian. So when our global neighbors, as I like to call them, come to America, they're confused. They don't know what to do. And I really think it's a great privilege to serve them. And that's what we get to do. So our work is called Diaspora Missions. And diaspora, if you look in the New Testament, when God there was persecution on the church in Jerusalem, the diaspora, the people who spread out, they fled and became the diaspora. And that's what the term diaspora is actually used by the United Nations now, since 2000. There's over 120 million people displaced. That would be five Washington states. If you took everyone in Washington state and made us move out, five Washington states, and moved us out, that's a lot of people who are looking for safety and looking for a place to live. Now, I'm Irish. You know, partly I tease in Indonesia. I said this is my Irish. I got my freckles on here, and that was true. I'm a lot of different things, like most of us. But when my ancestors came to America, how accepted were they? The Irish were not very accepted. So it happens. It happened to my people, and it happens all over. Different people groups, different ethnicities. Well, they're not quite good enough. But God says we're all His children. So that's what we get to work in that area. Now, Sharon Hamer is one of our coworkers, and she has also been ill, so she didn't get to come. So I'm the representative for the team. Sharon is a professor at North Seattle College, which is right across from Northgate by I-5. I've never lived in Seattle before, so I'm learning all these roads. I'm from Marysville, where Susan lives close by at least. And we pastored in Eastern Washington, and now we're living in the city, and I'm going, whoa. But that is where a lot of the immigrants have come. But I wonder how many immigrants are in Moses Lake. Think about that. In the school system, that's the best place to look in the school system. How many different languages are being spoken now? So I'm getting off a little bit. I apologize. I get excited, and I just want to share it all. Randy says, stick to your notes. He was a homiletics preacher, a preacher. He taught how to preach, so he's getting me going on that now. So Sharon Hamer, that's what I was talking about. Sharon is doing research to finish a doctorate, and she found out a lot of these immigrants who are coming to America and to Europe, which are safer places for them, they have gone through a lot of trauma. In fact, the clinicians, which are the counselors and the psychiatrists, they're saying they can help the immigrants through the trauma only to a certain point. But there's a certain point they can't help. They said there's a spiritual part, component that they can't help with, and they don't know how. But who knows how to help in that spiritual part? We do, don't we? The church, we know how to help them. So that's why we're starting our church plant, because there's great organizations that are helping the immigrants. But if they don't have the opportunity to know Jesus, to have Christians to introduce Jesus to them, they can't have that full healing. So I'll tell you one quick story about a family that we've helped, and Beth Backus. So Beth Backus is a church planter. She might have been through here. Her daughter was with Jocelyn in Indonesia. That's where I met them both. So Beth called me and said, guess what? I was flying back from a meeting on a plane, and I met this family who's just moving to Kent. And so I'm in contact with them, but since you're working with internationals, then I just wanted to let you know. So Randy and I went to meet this sweet family, and they told us their story. They're from Afghanistan, and 10 years prior to their leaving Afghanistan, the husband was killed, shot by Taliban. And then a few years later, the oldest son was kidnapped and kept as a slave by Taliban. And then they finally realized they had gone to Pakistan where it was a little safer, came back, and they realized it's time to go. And that's when a lot of Afghanis were leaving. It's time to go. It is not safe. Taliban is taking over again. So they're walking to the airport. The girls, the mom and the two girls, daughters, who are older than the son, the youngest son, Mohammed, they're walking to the airport, and he's walking in, and suddenly someone comes up and holds a gun to his head and says, if you keep going, you're dead. You have 5 minutes to get out of here. So what does he do? Does he keep going and get shot, or does he stay back? And maybe his sister and mom would come out, and they would all be in danger again. So he kept going. Is that trauma or not? Yeah. Getting kidnapped, is that trauma or not? So these are the things that many of the immigrants, we don't know about. Maybe we're working beside them or their children or at our schools, but we don't know some of the trauma they've been through. So that's part of what our ministry will be. And I just want to encourage you, our heart is to help every church in the Northwest Ministry Network to have a ministry to the immigrants and to have an understanding how they can welcome their global neighbors. When I was a child in Marysville, my dad is a machinist. Well, he's in heaven now, so I don't think he's a machining anymore. But he was a machinist. I just grew up in a blue-collar worker home. And my mom came to Christ when we were babies. And she just had a hunger for sharing Jesus. And one of the workers that worked with my dad was from Hungary. They fled as the communists were coming into Hungary, this young couple with their baby boys in a basket, and they're fleeing at night on the bicycles. And so they made it to Marysville, of all places. And I don't even know. I don't know if there's anyone alive. I should ask my mom. I'll see her tomorrow. How did they end up in Marysville? But my mom had a heart to help Mary Veselowski, and she taught her English using the Bible. And it just dawned on me after we started this ministry, I'm doing the same thing my parents did. I'm helping the immigrants. And my parents are not ministers. My mom was for a while. But it's just the everyday people doing the everyday jobs that makes a difference. Now, how many of you like a good movie
or a good TV show or a good book. Do you know that most of the Bible is written in story form? It's called narrative. And because God created us to like stories, and we learn from stories, and the Bible stories are the best. So today, my sermon is going to be three stories for you, because I'll show you an example of what our preaching will look like in our church. Because a lot of the people from different countries, they don't teach ABC, they teach in stories. And how many of people went to Sunday school and they learned the Bible through stories? So sometimes when we preach, it's like ABC, but God allows us to preach through stories. So he's allowing me today. Thank you for allowing me. So we'll have three stories because this is how one of the ways that we'll be preaching and sharing the gospel with our people group. And before I start those, I want to say there are many needs that immigrants have. And you'll see, if you get a flyer, you'll see that we wrote on there family support. If your children are going to a foreign school, how do you help them? In fact, I just started last week teaching at an elementary school. We've been invited to teach the parents of immigrant children English. So we're helping the parents learn how to speak English, and then they can talk to the school teachers. In Indonesia, where our kids went to school, often the children had to interpret for their parents, because our kids went to an international school, like the Korean parents. So how would you like, teenagers, how would you like to be the interpreter when your parents are going for a parent-teacher conference? Not fun. Official processes. When people are coming in the country, they need to fill out forms. Or if they need to get a job, how to fill out a form. Advocacy, speaking up for them. Speaking up. I write to the senators, and I talk to them about immigrant problems. Community care, that's Randy's big thing. Randy is a great pastor, a pastoral heart, and we are just wanting to love on people and visit them in their homes. English language learning is what we're starting with right now, and we have in our home, because our home is the church, we're a church plant under Shoreline Community Church, and we rent one of their houses. And we live in the bedroom, and there's a bedroom in that house, one bedroom, and then we use the living room and kitchen for our ministry every Tuesday night and other nights too. And then we're going to start in the fall discipleship and worship, and I want to call it WWFF, Word and Worship, Food and Family. Because when you live overseas, you miss your family a lot. So we still have people who are like our brothers and sisters in Indonesia, and we talk to them online and love them because they're our brothers and sisters. If you would open to 2 Kings 5, we're going to read a story. 2 Kings 5, find it on your Bible, on your phone, open your Bible. And many of you will know this story. Back in the days of Elijah the prophet, there was a young girl from Israel who had been kidnapped and enslaved in Aram. She worked for the wife of one of the commanders of the army of Aram. He was highly respected, but he had leprosy. Do any of you remember what the Bible says when you have leprosy in the Old Testament? Do you stay at home? No, you have to be separated. You are a social outcast. You have to move. So he had leprosy. I guess it wasn't so bad that he had to live out of the house yet. But leprosy, it can be just a small skin disease, or it can be deadly. But he had leprosy. So let's look at 2 Kings 5. I'm going to read just the first few verses. The king of Aram had great admiration for Naaman, and he is our man, the main man here, the commander of his army, because through him the Lord had given Aram great victories. Naaman was a mighty warrior, but he suffered from leprosy. At this time, Aramean raiders had invaded the land of Israel, and among their captives was a young girl who had been given to Naaman's wife as a maid. One day, the girl said to her mistress, "I wish my master would go to see the prophet in Samaria. He would heal him of his leprosy." Now, this girl was a slave. I mean, she was taken from her family. And as a side note, just to let you know, one of the areas that we'll be working with in ICC, International Community Center, is trafficking. I'm already working with a team in Indonesia. In fact, I just got a text from one of the people I'm working with today, this morning, working on anti-trafficking in Indonesia. We started a business to train women in sewing. So if any of you women go to the women's retreat next weekend, we'll be selling some of the things made from the ladies in Indonesia to help keep them out of trafficking. And I'm selling for four different entities, and one of them is for former prostitutes. And so trafficking is a bad, bad problem. And so we'll deal with that in America and in Indonesia. So this gal was kidnapped. She's not trafficked the same way. Maybe she was, because actually there's trafficking, there's sex trafficking, there's work trafficking. When we were on staff in Colville a few years ago, we went to an anti-trafficking seminar. A gal from Spokane came and spoke at one of the local churches, and I said, is there trafficking here? And she said, yes, even in Colville, there's a man from Africa who was lied to, and he was kept captive and was not paid. So there is trafficking in Moses Lake, I'm sure, too. And this young gal, Naaman's wife's maid, could have had a really bad attitude. I was kidnapped. I was trafficked. If he's sick, let him die. But she didn't. She was a godly young gal. And she was one of faith, because she said, she didn't just say that Elijah, the prophet, will just pray for you and anoint you. She said, do you remember it says in verse, let's look at it, verse 3, he would heal him of his leprosy. Isn't that faith? Isn't that beautiful? I want to have faith like that. He would heal him. She was brave. And guess what? The wife believed her, and Naaman believed her, and then the king even believed what she said. And they sent Naaman, the king, with all these kinds of, jewels and clothing and things. He sent them with Naaman and all his entourage to Israel to find Elijah, the king, or the prophet. And there's a little mess up with the king of Israel, and there you can read about that. But that's not the focus today. So Naaman went there. He was told where to find Elijah. He went to Elijah's house. And guess what? Elijah said to his servant, go and tell Naaman to go to the Jordan River and dip in it seven times, and then he will be healed. So if you were a senator or you were a CEO and you went to this business to talk to someone, and he sent his mail person, someone who just works, who organizes the mail, said, my boss said that you need to just go sign this contract. How would you feel? You would feel very disrespected, and that's how Naaman felt like, well, if that's how he's going to treat me, I'm not going to do this. I'm just going to go home. But one of his leaders, workers, said, hey, if he asked you to do something very brave, wouldn't you do it? Yeah. Well, this is simple. Just try it. And guess what? Naaman did it. He dipped in the dirty Jordan, not dirty like polluted, but well, maybe it was. I wasn't there. But it was muddy. He goes, I could have gone to the rivers in my country, Aram. They're clean and pristine. Why am I going in this dirty water? So Naaman dipped down once, twice, three, five times, six times, no change. So finally he dips down seven times, and his skin was as smooth as a baby's or a child's. God did it, and all because a young gal, whose name we do not know, was brave enough to share her faith. One unknown, unnamed gal. Now the second story today, we're having three stories. The second story is from Indonesia. And Jocelyn and I lived on East Java. And this story, and Jakarta, the capital city, which is on your map up there, I love your map out there, is in the West Java. But Central Java, there was a family, three generations, who lived in this big house. And this story was about 45 years ago. I was thinking about it about 45 years ago. And this family, three generations, lived in this big house. And in Indonesia, just like in the Naaman story, you have people that help you in the home. I really miss having people in the home to help me. We were on furlough, itinerating, speaking, and I came home one time. I said, why aren't the dishes done? And I realized, because I didn't do them. It's very affordable to have house help. And if you want, okay, I love Mexican food. If you want Mexican food, I'm not saying we'll eat it later, okay? But if you want Mexican food, you have to make your own salsa. You have to make the sour cream, which I learned to do. You have to roll out your own tortilla, everything. So it's very handy to have someone help you in the house and clean off the volcanic ash that comes every day, almost every day when it's not rainy season. So anyway, they had in this home, they had house helpers. And one of them was just a young teenage gal, probably 14, 15. She had finished sixth grade, which was a requirement then. She had finished school, and she needed to work. Her family couldn't feed her, poor. And this girl was a believer. She was a Christian. And in Indonesia, it's majority Muslim, 89% Muslim. And so she was a minority. And this family was Muslim. And she talked to her mom, should I work for this family or should I go out of the area and work and get a job? And so she prayed about it and she thought, I should work for this family. And she did. And this family was nice enough that they allowed her to go to Sunday school in the morning, on Sunday morning. So she would go to Sunday school and go to church and worship, come home, and as she's working with the children and maybe cleaning and sweeping and doing laundry, she would sing songs. Jesus loves me, this I know. And the two of the girls, the granddaughters of the grandpa and the daughters of the parents, they go, oh, we like these songs. Where do you learn them? Oh, we learn them. I learn them when I'm at church. Remember, your grandpa says I can go to church every Sunday. I have the time off on Sunday. I get to go there and I learn. Oh, that's so cool. We want to go. So she's going, ooh, Christian church Muslim girls. Will that work? She said, ask your parents. Her parents said, okay with us, but we have to ask grandpa. He was the hierarch. He's the head of the family, the patriarch. So they asked grandpa. Grandpa said, sure, they're just girls. Let them go. Well, little did he know that the power of God through those Sunday school lessons were very amazingly touching. They amazingly touched those girls' hearts. And I fail to tell you that these girls were pretty snarky and naughty. They were mean, sometimes to their older cousin. They just, but then after a while, after going to Sunday school, they started being more patient and kind and loving. And the parents were like watching this. Okay, let them keep going to Sunday school, whatever they're doing. And their older cousin, whose name is Gatut, said, wow, these girls aren't picking on me and blaming me and always making fun of me anymore. Maybe I should go. So Gatut started going, and guess what happened to him? He chose to follow Jesus too. And then pretty soon, more cousins, and then mom and dad, and grandma and grandpa, and aunts and uncles. So that this one girl, she influenced this family. And let me tell you who Gatut is. Gatut was our Bible school president we worked with. And I don't know if you ever went to the Bible school, Sati, or had any interns from, yeah. So sometimes students from our school would work with the same church that Jocelyn worked with. And Gatut was our Bible school president, and he now, and has been off and on the General Council of the Assemblies of God of Indonesia, the highest leadership of the Assemblies of God Church. He is a powerful, godly, humble leader. And we've lived with them before, and we know, you know, when you live with someone, you get to know them well. So there, he and Esther are wonderful people. In fact, Esther's working, I'm working with Esther on anti-trafficking in Indonesia still. So this one girl, so I asked Gatut, I said, so how long did she, after I heard the story, I said, how long did she work for you? Oh, maybe a year or two. Well, what's her name? I don't know. We just called her Mbak, which means miss. Mbak, Mbak. And so no name, but what an impact. And I wonder if she knows how many people have come to Christ because she was not afraid to share her faith and invite the little girls. Well, she didn't invite them, to allow them to go to Sunday school. The last story is about a young gal who felt a call to be a missionary. But this is an actual record of what was written about her. It is with great regret that I have to recommend to you that we do not accept Miss Alward. She has a call to serve God. She is sincere and courageous, but we cannot take the responsibility of sending a woman of 26 with such limited Christian experience and education to China. This was the report of the chairperson from China Inland Mission in London. After 3 months in their missionary training program, Gladys Alward was not considered strong enough and she was considered too old to learn the language. She was told, just stay in England and use your gifts here. After she had come to Christ at 18, raised in a Christian home, but not really Christian. Maybe they went to church on Easter and Christmas, but she really didn't know Jesus. But someone introduced her to Jesus at 18, and she chose to follow him. And some years following that, she knew that she had a call to missions. In fact, she read a newspaper commentary about China and about the millions of people who had never heard of the gospel, and the article changed her life. So then she went to those 3 months of training, and she was rejected as a missionary. So what should she do? Stay in England? Is she hearing God right? She wasn't sure. She knew what her heart was saying, and after more prayer, she knew she was called to go to China. So if no one was going to sponsor her, she was going to work and earn her own money. She was a maid, and that's what she had done before the missionary training, and she went back to being a maid. She worked faithfully. She saved her money. She got extra jobs. If there was a party at some rich person's home, she would serve there. She saved her money and saved her money, and God bless. What would have taken 3 years to make was just 1 year. She had asked at a travel agency, how much would it cost to get to China? And the man goes, who's going to China? I'm going to China. By yourself? Yes. Well, you can't go to China. I'm going to China. He says, okay, you can go by boat, you can go by train. She says, what's cheapest? You have to go through Siberia and then down to China. Okay, I'm going to put money down for my ticket now. Every payday, I will come and put money down. He says, crazy. I've never done this before. You can do it now, right? She was determined. And she did it. And so she put that money down every payday. And then when she was working, she was heard. There was a letter from a missionary in China, a 73-year-old missionary, who said, I need a young woman to help me in China. And she knew that. I am on the right track. I'm going to go work with her. And she corresponded with Jeannie Lawson. And she, Jeannie said, come and help me. So finally, on October 18, 1930, Gladys Allward set out from Liverpool Street Station in London on her arduous overland journey with two one-pound notes. Do you know what a pound is? It's like a little bit over a dollar. It was worth more in those days, but that's all she had was 2 1-pound notes and a 9 pence, which isn't much money either. She had them sewn in her corset, okay? Sorry, that's private language, right? But that's what the book says. And I'm so thankful we don't have those anymore. She carried 2 suitcases. One held her clothing. The other contained corned beef, fish, beans, crackers, soda biscuits, rye crisp, tea, coffee, hard-boiled eggs, a saucepan, a kettle, and an alcohol stove. So she had some friends and some of her employees helped her to collect these clothes and the food and even the stove. 10 days later, after she got on the train, she was in Siberia. As the train progressed, soldiers got on and civilians got off at each stop. At the town of Chita, a railway official tried to persuade her to disembark. And if you don't understand Russian, what are you going to do? So he's saying in Russian, you know, get off the train. There's stuff happening. She says, no, I have ticket to China. Me, China. You know how if you don't speak the other language and you make it very easy. Me, China. No, stop here. He just rolled his eyes and off she went. And the only people on the train with her were soldiers. She gets to the train stops. All the soldiers get off. The lights go off in the train and she's looking. What's happening? She's on the front line of a war between China and Russia. That's what he was trying to tell her. So she took her suitcases, and she's very small, I think only 4'8". She took her big suitcases and walked through the snow all the way back to Chita, this town. She was learning that God would take care of her, even if she didn't get it right all the time. Finally, after riding trains and ships and mules, she made it up to the city of Yangcheng, China, where she and Jenny began working together. Now, Jenny had bought an old inn. An inn. In the old days, before people really had motels, motels came up when you had cars, so you could park your car and stay in a room. Well, inns were like if you had horses, like the cowboy days, or people would stay at an inn. In fact, I stayed at the Inn of Moses Lake last night. It wasn't quite the same as China, but I had really good food there, so I'm in good bed. And so I don't think their inn was like that. But a two-story room. In fact, I was researching about this, and I saw that the inn is still there. Someone had gone back and found the inn, And it's just this very narrow door. And many places in Europe and Asia, you have these busy, busy streets, and then you have a door that goes in, and then you have the house in a courtyard. So that's what it was like. So there is, Jenny had bought this this inn, and it was needing to be fixed. It was quite a mess. So they were working on it. They had others hired to help them. And her goal, Jenny's goal, was for to bring in the muleteers or mule drivers. Those were the what we would call the long-haul truckers in those days. So the mule drivers would bring the goods in, and they would need a place to stay that was safe because they were bandits and marauders. So they would want to go inside the walls of an inn. They went to, and so, but the problem was this inn, which they called the Inn of the Eight Happinesses, and there is a movie called The Inn of Six Happinesses, and it's I watched it the other day. Gladys Allward, when she saw this movie about herself, said it wasn't quite right. But anyway, it was a good movie. But the Inn of the Eight Happinesses, which is the all the like the fruit of the spirit, but the Chinese idea of that. And so, but the problem was the Inn of the Eight Happinesses was thought of as being haunted by the Chinese. Oh, who would want to buy that place? Those crazy white women, those white devils. So Randy, my husband, grew up in Malaysia, and the Chinese have a saying about anyone who's not Chinese. They don't do this much anymore, but they did when he was young. If you're like from Portugal, they call him the red-haired devil. If you're from India, where you wear a turban, you're the big-headed devil. So these are the white devils, the women. So who would want to go to an inn like that? So the goal was for Gladys, or for Jeannie, to tell the Bible stories, because they always told stories, and that was the tradition. You didn't have TVs, so you told stories. But the muleteers just passed by. They wouldn't go. And so she was taught, Gladys, who was told she could not learn, she was too old to learn Chinese and too dumb to minister, guess what? She learned enough later Chinese and the dialect to be fluent and used. But at this time, she didn't know Chinese very well. So Gladys taught her to say, Miao Beiche, I don't speak Mandarin, sorry. A couple of these words I know. Miao Beiche, Miao Good So, How, Lai Lai Lai. This is how you say come. You don't go like this in Asia. This is naughty. So you go, Hi, Lai Lai Lai, come. And so this translates to, we have no bugs, we have no fleas, good, lie, lie, no fleas, no bugs. But they still wouldn't come. So Jeannie, who it sounds like from the book, was a little bit bossy, and she said, Gladys, you know she's only this little girl, Gladys, if the muleteer is afraid to come in, you grab the harness. I don't know if it's a harness or a bridle when it's the whole train, but you grab the bridle of the first head mule and lead him in. And when he smells the food, he's coming in. And that's what happened. And the mule driver, the muleteer is going, aye. They're so afraid to go in this place that's haunted. But what could they do? Well, guess what? They found out it wasn't haunted, the food was good, there was no fleas, there were no bugs, and they had good stories. So Jeannie was telling stories, and it was good. And then they had this man who helped with the stalls and helped cleaning and fixing up things. He says, my Chinese better than your Chinese, I tell stories for you. So they had him tell the Bible stories. So he said, once upon a time, there was this couple that God created, and they lived in a beautiful garden. But then the rain started coming, and they had to get on this big boat with Moses. And then Moses parted the water, and then there was Jesus. So if you know of the Bible a little bit, he got it all mixed up. So he did not, they fired him from that job. So unfortunately, Jeannie was leaning down and looking down from the second floor, and one of the banisters broke from the balcony, and she fell. Gladys took care of her, but she died. So what should Gladys do then? Should she go home, go back to England, or should she stay in China? She stayed, because she already had people she was taking care of. In fact, she had been at the market, and there's this lady, and she goes, Lai Lai, come, Lai Lai. And she goes, and she's thinking, what does this lady want to sell? And she comes up to her, and she goes, you buy this girl. You know, just 20 pence. She goes, buy, in her mind, she goes, buy a girl? That's horrible. She wants to sell a girl. And then she thought, hey, if I don't buy her, someone else is going to buy her, and they're going to abuse her and misuse her. At least as a slave. So she goes, How much? You know, bartering. If you've ever been in another country, you haven't know enough language, you can barter. So how much? Oh, this much. Best price. And so she got it down to 6 pence. So she got the girl for 6 pence. So I looked it up. What would 6 pence be worth at that time in England? And it was a dozen. Six, you could buy a dozen eggs for about that much. Let me see. Yeah, it's worth 12 cents, 12 US cents, and you might buy a dozen eggs. So that girl was only worth a dozen eggs to that lady. But to Gladys, she was worth everything. So slowly, children kept coming to them. And even the street kids that found a home there, they go, I have other street kids I know. So people would, we hear you taking kids in. So they brought in kids from all over. She had over 100 kids. In fact, her work was becoming well-known in Yongchen, and before she was the White Devil, remember? At this point, she is becoming well-known and well-respected. She was called into the local prison to quell a riot. They were killing each other, and no one was brave enough to go in there. And they said, Gladys will do it. So they sent her. She goes, what? And she prayed, and God sent this little gal in there. And it's a great story. I won't get into it. You'll have to read the book. And she quieted the prison riot down. And also the Mandarin, who is the chief official for the leader, kind of like the mayor or the county leader, and very respected, he said, oh, Miss Gladys Allward, I need you to come help me. And she says, how can I help you? Sure. I want you to be the chief foot inspector for me. What? Do you all know what the tradition was? The women would bind the girls' feet. So here's the toes, and they would bind the feet, and they would walk like this. But the government had realized that is not good, but it was beautiful, beautiful small feet. I wouldn't work there. I have big feet. But they would do that. They would mind their feet, and it was very painful. How can women work? But it's kind of, anyway. So Randy remembers in Malaysia, there was a grandma, and her feet must have been bound way before Gladys Allward's era in the 30s, because this would have been in the 60s, and she was, So this was before the government made this law that you couldn't bind the feet. So once they're old, you don't unbind the feet. It's very painful. So they kept her, and he said, it was like she was walking on stilts. So Gladys, other people had tried to go, and the people said, no, this is who we are. We bind feet. But Gladys went, and they accepted her. But she said, I will only go if I'm allowed to preach the gospel. He says, go do what you want. If you're brave enough to do this, you can do what you want. She did. So that opened the door for her to share the gospel more, for people to respect her, and for her to help the women and be a blessing to them and to the young girls later. And it also offered her the opportunity to have more notoriety and to be respected, and it brought in finances for feeding her children. So war came, 1937. Some of you might remember back your parents. I remember my grandparents knew this time. My parents were young, just barely born at this era. Japanese came into China. They came the Luar Saja. They just came into from the borderland, the water. But Yangcheng's up in the city. And so people weren't frightened yet. But they were always hearing about this. And pretty soon, the army kept getting closer and closer. And they told Gladys, you need to leave. As a foreigner, you need to get out of here. You are the big enemy, even more than China. You need to go. You're English. Go. She says, I will not go. I am a citizen of China. And she was. She chose to be a citizen. I'm a citizen of China. I will stay here. I will take care of my children. And she did send a group of kids out with one of her older orphans, and he was killed on the way back. So it made her very frightened to send the children out. Finally, some friends came and said, there is a bounty on your head. You need to go. You make all your children be in an unsafe situation. So she said, I won't leave them. So at nighttime, they took as much food as they had. They took over 100 children. How many of you have ever worked in Sunday school or you have your own kids? Can you keep 100 children quiet or even 15 or 5? So they're walking through the woods. They're walking through the hills. They have hardly any food. They sent kids ahead of bigger kids to spy out and see if there's Japanese. And one time one of them came running back and said, "Japanese coming in the woods." So they quietly got in the woods. They're quiet. They're so quiet. Don't sneeze. They're so quiet. And then the Japanese walked by. They did not hear or see them. God protected them. Then they ran out of food. But the monks, the Chinese monks, fed them. The farmers fed them, and the soldiers fed them. After 12 days in the mountains, they made it to the river because they had been told if orphans get across the Yellow River, Madam Chiang Kai-shek, who was the leader, and later they went to Taiwan. They had to flee to Taiwan. She said, "We will take care of the orphans." So she wanted to get them across. They get to the big old river. The Japanese are coming anytime. They don't know. There are no boats. There are no boats. They sit there, I don't know how many days. And Gladys is very ill because she had illness then, and she had been giving her food to her children. She did not know what to do. And so she just was depressed. But one of the little kids came up and said, "But Miss Gladys, didn't you teach us that God answers our prayer? And didn't he open the Red Sea and help them go across? God can help us get us across." She said, "Yes, let's pray." So they start singing and praising God. Then this army officer, a Chinese army officer, comes up and says, "Who are you and what are you doing here?" "Oh, we're orphans leaving Yongcheng. We're trying to get across so that the Yellow River so Madam Chiang Kai-shek will take care of the orphans." Oh, let us help you get across." So he got boats and they took him across. It still took quite a while for the children to find homes, and then Gladys collapsed. She was very ill. And because communism took over later after Japanese left, then communism came in, and Gladys was, because she's Western and English, she was not allowed to come back legally. But she snuck back in. She climbed over the wall. She snuck back in and got the deed for the inn, so they wouldn't lose that. Eventually, she went to Taiwan and started an orphanage, and she had adopted 5 of those kids. Some of those kids she saw later, some of them she never saw again. But what a difference she made in their lives. She was a hero for those children. Now, I'm never gonna lead 100 children across a mountain at my age especially, although I like hiking. But you know what? God uses each of us in our own ways, in our own time. And as I said earlier, he uses us but he wants us to be used for the kingdom of God until we go to heaven. In our world, we need heroes. Heroes to those who cannot speak for themselves. In Proverbs 31, 8 through 9, it says, "Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves. Ensure justice for those being crushed. Yes, speak up for the poor and helpless and see that they get justice. There are those who are trafficked who have no voice. There are refugees who can't speak up often because they don't speak the language or they don't know the laws. There are children down the road from where you live who are abused. There are older people who are lonely. There are neighbors who need to know that God is for them when their child is sick or their marriage is on the rocks. They need to know that He, the Creator of the world, will help them. We are all called. We're called to know Him. We're called to obey Him, and we're called to serve Him. It's a blessing to have all of those three in our lives. I encourage you to step out from where it's safe and go where there are those in danger for their lives, for their souls, and for their families. God uses everyday people, like the young godly girl in 2 Kings 5. We don't even know her name. She was taken as a slave from her family in Israel, but she kept her heart right before God. And she had the courage to speak up the truth in an ungodly culture. God used a young teenage maid in Indonesia to take a family from a belief system of fear to the freedom of knowing and serving Jesus. There are over 70 family members who follow Jesus now from Gatut's family in Indonesia. Many are pastors and Christians. One is a pediatrician because of the influence of that one girl. God knows and sees you, and He also calls you. There's a world out there that needs what only you can give. You can start serving right here in your local church, in your neighborhood, in your town. That's how Randy and I started. I started in my home church where I met Susan. And then it's been a wonderful life because we said yes to God. Well, you say yes to God's call. So some of you are struggling with, who is Jesus? I don't even know. Some of you are struggling like, I knew him before, but I've been disappointed by him. Some of you are like, I'm kind of like ready to start some new things for God. Some of you have neighbors that just need you to bake them cookies. That's what I'm talking about. We can all do that. So I want to ask you if you would pray with me now, and I'm going to pray for you. And I want to say thank you for letting us come and share. And we're not anybody special. My dad was a machinist. Tomorrow you'll see me in my boots and if you saw me in my jeans, I'm going to my property and I'm going to get my chainsaw out. Okay? So I don't just stand up and preach. I'm a regular person who does dishes and has a chainsaw. But God is faithful. Whatever our gifting is, he will use it. And I want you to, there's some of you that I think want special prayer. And I'm going to ask you to come up. Don't be shy. I remember when I was a kid, the pastor would say, come on up. When I was 4 years old, I walked up by myself to the front. I'm not going to shame you. But let's come up and have some prayer time. If you just want to hang out with Jesus a little bit, come on up. If you want to say, God, I'm open to this new area. Or maybe you have a prayer need, and I know there's a prayer team that will pray for you. Come on up. I'm going to ask Jocelyn, you lead the way, okay? You be right up here. Come on, be brave, because I'm going to pray over you.